Message.
All right. So welcome everyone to the Mystic Chat. So we have a very special guest here. I'm so excited that we have Laura Tempest Zakroff. And as I'm saying that, I'm like, don't screw up her name, don't mess up her name, don't mess up her name, because that's just how my brain works and I have anxiety. My name is Chris, and Chris Allen, and I'm an ordained minister with the Fellowship of the Phoenix and a published author with Moon Books. And I would like to introduce my co-host, Laura Gonzalez. Laura, tell us about yourself.
Hi, everybody. My name is Laura Gonzalez. I'm a Circle Sanctuary minister. I am a priestess of the goddess. I am a podcaster. I am a witch for hire. Pew, pew. I am a co-host of Mystic Chat. And I am a mom of a dog called Uno. That's it for today. And with that, I would like to introduce my lovely Ruby Ruse.
Thank you so much. I am Ruby Ruse. I am a pagan YouTube artist. You can find my channel, Fairy Fortunes, on YouTube. And I also tour around doing festivals, doing Fairy Fortune Oracle readings. And I'm very excited to tell you that I have two festivals coming up in the near future. One is in Wisconsin, Run in the Glen, and the second one is in South Elgin, which is very close to Chicago, where we are all situated. And that is the first weekend of August. But my channel is very, very small in comparison to our lovely guests. So I would like to hand it over to our guest, Laura, tonight. Please tell us more about yourself and your new work, Anatomy of the Witch.
Hi, everyone. Laura, or Tempest, either works. maybe for tonight, it should probably be Tempest so we don't get confused with the right. Laura. Or the power of Laura squared. it's that much awesomeness. So I am an artist, I'm an author, a performer, and I have quite a few books at this point. I think we're up to seven. And the latest one is Anatomy of a Witch, A Map to the Magical Body, which is going to be our primary one here. But you might have, you might be familiar with Sigil Witchery, which Laura and I did an interview of last year.
Mm-hmm.
Again, what is time? We were talking about that earlier.
Yeah.
As well as We the Liminal Spirits Oracle, The Witch's Cauldron, The Witch's Altar, The New Aradia, and I think I got them all. And this is Gracie. She's a beautiful black kitten.
That's awesome. My Gracie. I love it. I love it. So, you know, I read your book and I was just blown away, because at first, you know, I'm reading the first few chapters. I'm like, oh, it's like self-care. Yes, but it goes so deep and so wonderful. And there's so much magic, and my personal favorite is like movement and dance and tarot. Tell us about why you decided to write the book. Like, what was your motivation?
So when I first started on this path, now we're going back over two decades ago, it very closely intersected with my journey in dance. So we're exploring all of what was happening in New England for witchcraft and paganism at the time, and also started taking belly dance classes. And actually the whole group, we all started doing that. And our first explorations into ritual were, well, I wonder if we bring in music to this, and I wonder if we do movement. And, you know, even for those very early days, we found it was really powerful, that it really activated the space, and that we connected more deeply, even though we didn't have a highly structured ritual. It was really ecstatic. And that has been a basis for my performances over the years and a deep part of my personal spirituality. And over the last two decades, being able to use those techniques to help others engage with their bodies has been one of the primary joys. You know, I love to teach. I love to teach art, but to see folks, you know, all different shapes and types of bodies, all different genders, and different abilities, to be able to go, okay, I have a body. What am I capable of? What can I do with? What can I work with it? From the simple to the complex. Mm-hmm. And I think we should look at our bodies as our primary magical tool. It is, you know, everything you need. You know, here's your wand, right? Your athame. Here is your altar itself. All of these things, all of the elements are present there. And when, you know, we were talking early on before we started about, like, you know, 20 years ago, there's a lot of academic focus, right? We were so much about let's be in our heads, which I think was a part of a response to what was going on in the 60s and 70s, right? To be like, we're into free love and drugs and being out and being naked and being hippies, which is great, right? But you always are going to have this pendulum swing where we go from one extreme to the other before we find this golden mean space, and that we can find that balance between honoring the body and the spirit and the mind together. So having established what I've already done in previous books, I'm like, now is the time to introduce the body and to delve into it as a way to get deeper into your practice.
I love it so much. So, you know, so people who see the show and talk to me and know me, they see that I have a stutter. And when I was a kid, it was really, really bad, like really bad. And so I learned to communicate through a movement in dance and stuff. So a magical dance, ecstatic dance, ritual dance has always been very like sacred and special to me. And so I love how in the book you have sections, you know, the lungs, the heart, serpent. I'm very partial to serpents, and you know, and things like that, and they're loosely correlated to the four elements, which I really enjoyed that part. But I really liked how, like, for example, you know, as a fellow a teacher, I'm always looking for ways to help a beginner and advanced practitioners, to be honest, how to have these magical experiences without saying, okay, just do the magic, you know? And I really liked how you, like breath, when you were talking about the breath, because every magical book talks about the breath, but you do it in such a way that it's enchanting. I don't know how else to say it. Like it got my attention because I was like, ooh, this is new, this is fresh, this is interesting. Tell me about that process. Like, how did you figure out how to explain, like, how did you, what's the word I'm looking for? How did you find that a style to communicate in such a way?
It's a great question. Cause it's not something I've actually been thinking a lot about lately is, the translation, right, of like what you do for your personal practice and how it works in your own head is one realm. And then especially if you're working with a coven or a group or teaching other people, right, you have to be able to make it accessible to a variety of different brain types, right? Everybody's brain works a little bit differently. And I'm really blessed in that being able to teach dance all over the world since, you know, the early 2000s has really pushed me as a teacher to think about, okay, this person's going to see it this way and that person sees it that way. There's no way to get every single time. It's a learning experience as well. Like the more you teach, the more you learn. I love that. So in thinking about, okay, what is consistent? What works for a lot of different people, you know, that I saw the results and that they still come back and go, oh, that breathing technique. Oh, the way you did this. So putting that into, so everything that's in the book is something that I have been doing for at least a decade or more. Right. So it's got first that tried and true, but it's really difficult to do things that are movement, right? Movement and body base and describe them in such a way. So part of it is just going through my brain, reading it, putting it down, trying to describe it to other people, shopping it out to a whole bunch of different kinds of practitioners and say, does this make sense? Does this work? Or does it sound like what's going on here? You know, it's like we were talking last night on my Patreon about in the breath section, this is about a kitten of space. You know, like, because then that's how people are like, oh, you're just trying to be weird. I'm like, no, I really talk about a kitten of space. Like that is a technique. Like, you know how big a kitten is. And if you hold that space, you know, right? Like that, oh, that's where I'm going to put my hands, because most of us are visual learners in the magical traditions, right? It's, mm-hmm. we are able to use our right brains in all sorts of ways. Again, it's not always consistent, but having some sort of physical thing to connect to makes those metaphysical concepts more concrete. So the simplicity of it too is just to start with breath, right? Mm-hmm. The very simple thing of posture. That's our first exercise in the group is, how are you sitting? How are we all sitting right now, right? And is our chest open? Are we sitting up? Are we slouched? How much breath can you get in there? And to do a comparison where, like, if you're just hunched over right now, how much breath do you get in your body? Versus,
right,
open my chest. Can I sit up? How deep can I feel down into my belly with my breath? It doesn't require counts or some sort of chant or anything else like that. The other major breathing technique, there's several ones in there. The other one is the three breaths, which goes throughout the book. And if you've watched the Witch Hole workouts, you know that almost every single one has the three breaths, which is simply a staggered breath that you hold it for, you breathe in, hold for about 3 to 4 seconds, exhale. Next one goes to 5 to 6 seconds, exhale. And the last one, maybe 8 to 9, if you have the lung capacity. And that is something I've used in performance, that I use in meditation, that I use when I'm going to sleep, when I wake up in the morning. Like, it is a consistent thing. And there are definitely all sorts of complicated techniques out there. But the fact that you can just breathe and count, right, and suddenly become a little bit more present in your body, I think that makes it easy for folks rather than being like, oh, here's all this other stuff.
But, you know, one of the things I really enjoyed about the entire book, but especially the breathing, is it isn't just, okay, we're breathing. It's, we're already doing the magic. We're already doing witchcraft. We're already doing the healing, like from the first page. You know, that's what I really liked about it because, you know, when I was trained back many, many moons ago, it was, here's his breathing technique. And then, okay. And then that was it. You just, you know, had to learn it. I kind of want to switch in gears for a little bit, but we can come back and go and do it, you know. One of the things, and I like talking about things that people don't like to talk about. That's what makes shows like this fun. So one of my favorite things you said in the book, and I was just going, yes, is when you said magic doesn't have to come from sexuality. Laura Gonzalez is back there like so happy screaming because, you know, so one of the things about, I'd say myself and people I know is I am very body positive. I am very active and stuff like that. So it's not about being shy. It's not about being embarrassed or it's sexuality is not sacred. You know, it's for me, it's just the boundary. I don't do Skyclad. I don't. And if people do that, I empower that. I mean, I've done it several times, but it's not my go-to. And if people do sex magic, I think that's great. I will always support people on their path, but that's not my path. So I take magic from different places. So like the stars, the moon, the trees, the earth, myself, so forth. So I'm wondering, what was the motivation of that deep wisdom?
The gender binary pisses me off.
I have to jump on board with Chris there, is that I think that something that's happened recently in paganism is that gender binary that you just talked about has kind of made a line for some people, like, what if you're non-binary? What if you're transgendered? What if you're asexual? A lot of people like to label asexuality as defective, and it's not defective. It's just people that don't express themselves through sexuality. But please continue. I agree with Chris. I really enjoyed that section of your work.
I think a lot of it has to do with, you know, when I was a young magical practitioner. And that was a time, especially in the 90s, we were getting kind of the resurfacing of Dianic practices, of being very, very goddess oriented. And this whole thing about like the womb, right? Like all of that stuff. And at one point coming out of Catholicism going, I need some strong feminine energy in here. You know, I need something that's a different role model besides the Virgin Mary and a bunch of saints who had their tits cut off. You know, like there needs to be a little bit more. I mean, that those are really fascinating stories. And I love some of the, you know, the women in the Old Testament, but it wasn't quite enough. And finding out that my body is, not to say defective, but it doesn't function the way that a lot of bodies are supposed to function, especially when it comes to the uterus and other things, and going, wait, this is supposed to be where my magic comes from, is from a defective organ. Mm. Like, why not the whole of my body? And what about when people have a hysterectomy? And, you know, what about all of these different things that are tied into other things? Like, why is that the key point in your power, when the fact that you are a spirit manifest in a physical body, that is the wonder itself. That is the magic. So when we get stuck on these parts, we're missing the whole picture. And I don't think we're doing anything better than other paths that have been like, well, the body isn't sacred. It's sinful. It's this, it's that. It's like, let's kind of embrace the body for all its weird smells and its fantasticness and its variations, because they're all amazing and beautiful. So that's... It's kind of like, I'm sick of the shit.
As a person with variation, I'm fat. Don't open your eyes like plates, people. Fat is not a bad word. It's just a word that defines people like tall or short or brunette or blonde. People are skinny and people are fat. And I love the inclusiveness, the diversity, as you say, the variations. And two things, you know, how important it is that in this day and age, we honor our bodies. And something that is really important to understand, that when we're talking about people with uterus or people who are a parent, we are not excluding women or mothers, because those who want to be referred to as women or mother, do your thing. But they are, I mean, you can say, I like to dedicate this to all the mothers and all the birthing parents. And that doesn't take away from one or the other. And we as a society, I think we are, I mean, it's 2021. Can we have space for everybody? A, that's what I think is very important. But B, haven't we had enough sexual abuse coming from clergy? And the fact that in magic, we are demystifying the, it's transferred through sexuality. No, it's not. No, it's not. Nobody has the sacred, insert sexual organ, body part name here. Nobody. I mean, we need to move forward and away from that, you know?
You know, what's so funny about that is before I got the magical training and ordinations that I have through the fellowship, the only people I really knew of pagan clergy were for Gardnerian. And, you know, and at the time I was like, I don't know, 18, 19. And they're like, oh yeah, the only way you need to be a high priest is through a sexual initiation. And I remember thinking, I will never be ordained then. And I honestly thought that. I honestly thought I would never be ordained as a witch. I honestly thought that. And then I had a teacher who knew better and said, no, that's no. That's a big no. Gross. Ugh. To me, here's the thing. Well, I'm going to say something very controversial, but whatever. I think that if it's required, I think it's a predatory behavior.
Yes.
Whenever you require any initiation, I don't care if it's your the best teacher you've ever had, that feels predatory to me. Partly, I work with a lot of grief counseling and trauma, and oh my God, that's beyond abuse to me. So, but anyway, so I mean, I don't want to go down a dark road, but the reason I bring it up is because, you know, you did. You know, I felt empowered by just reading that section. It made me feel very, I'm a sexual person. However, I just felt like, okay, this, we're on the same page. I'm like, I was here for it, you know. Ruby Brew just smelling ear to ear. I love it.
Yeah.
So what I want to talk about next is something that's close to my heart as well, is your section of the ancestors and stuff like that. So I kind of want to know, you and I have a slightly different approach. So I'm very curious about how you manifest the ancestors in your type of magic in relation to the book and things like that.
So the ancestors are brought in the witch bones. And I feel like since we dove in, we have the witch lungs, the breath that we're talking about, the witch heart, the serpent, which was delving into sexuality, intuition, sensuality, et cetera. And we have the witch bones and the witch mind. So the witch bones are what give our practice structure and form. When we think about bones themselves, right, they help give the body strength, how things are organized, a sense of a system. The bones are where in our physical bodies, right, is where blood cells are manufactured. And we connect the blood back to pattern and ritual, right, to our witch heart. So when we think about tradition, right, tradition is something as a structure that we can build upon, but it can also be unhealthy. You think about constrictive traditions or things that are outdated, as we were just talking about, different concepts that are no longer beneficial, right? That basically cause rickets, bone disease, it's not a great thing, right? So part of our bones and our structure is the traditions, but it can also be where we live, right? The spirits of place, very important, like where you are living. It's not only just where you're from, but where you're living deeply affects your practice. The weather patterns, the spirits, the animals, the trees, the flora and fauna, right? And then ancestors is a broad topic for this book, right? It's not the heart of it, which is why I recommend a few other ones. But for me, the ancestors is who you've come from on one side of things, right? Who are your biological ancestors, but there's also the family, right, that we've acquired over time, right? Especially if you're adopted, like whoever has nurtured you into being is also part of the ancestral grouping. There's also the mighty dead, those who have inspired you, who you might not be physically connected to in space, right? It's beyond that into a spiritual aspect. So recognizing that also puts us into the place of understanding that as they have left us a legacy, we are creating legacy in the moment as well. Mm. And we are thinking about what are we doing right now and what are we planning for the future that might leave a structure that might be an influence for other people. And that's not to put pressure and say that everything you have to do is legacy, like this big L legacy, but more a small legacy, kindness. You know, when you are kind to somebody, like some stranger in the grocery store, but you like made their day, that has had an impact on somebody that has a rippling effect. That is also a legacy. Those are the patterns. That's also tradition. That's also the witch bones. So that's kind of what I bring to it in the book.
I find that if you can change one person's world, then you have changed the world. And it seems like that was definitely echoed in your words and in your book.
Thank you.
And to be honest, I don't think it's just that section. It's like all the sections, it's about change. And, you know, one of the things I think that's so important is I think you change how people think. And I don't mean that in a I change how you think kind of way. It's a more of a, wow, you open up my mind, or I didn't see it that way before. That's what I mean. Like in every chapter or in every section, there's a thing. Cause I was just like, and I've been doing paganism for a long time. And so I was just like, wow, this is a cool thing. And wow. Okay. It's like, it's taking sacred teachings and wisdom teachings, but for not only making them accessible, but changing how you think of these techniques, you know. You know, you were talking about changing the world and stuff like that, and the section on the weaver. First of all, I love all these names. The weaver, because, you know, in my tradition, we work a lot with the three norns and things like that. But anytime, like, weaving, like, ooh, weaving sounds like magic, and I love it. Actually, yeah. So we start off in your book, like we talk about the breath, the heart, the serpent, and then we go into the bones. And then we, I don't want to say take a turn, but we expand or evolve. And in Thimp, we're in the weaver. So, you know, I was pleasantly surprised because a lot of books, you know, earth, air, fire, water, here's all the teachings. Okay, done. So why the weaver? Why did you weave that in there? Huh, you see what I did?
So the witch mind, the weaver. So it does tap into weave the liminal. I try to be consistent in my metaphors. So there's generally going to be a weaving metaphor. There's probably going to be an ocean metaphor.
Yeah. You also talk about weaving our own myths too. So that metaphor is carried throughout the book.
Like it's that tactile thing. It's again, the creating the images and the thoughts. And it's the last section of the anatomy that we cover before we go into the next parts. Because of what I was talking about earlier, right? Like especially modern paganism, magical practice has been so academic, very scholarship focused, which is again, fine. Like it's good that we are being more focused on scholarship and finding the facts and not spreading misinformation. That's kind of the goal, right? Hopefully. But at the same time, we live in our heads so much. The society does that to us. You know, think about all of the different things that are going on with our brains, especially in the last year and a half, right? Like to be in this pandemic time, and what does it mean to be separated from other people and doing Zoom and all these different things. So I cover this section last because it starts you off with that simple, here is your breath. Connect to your body. Here's your heart. Feel that pattern. Feel that beat. Here's the serpent. What is your intuition? How do you change yourself? What are the traditions that you come from? And then last, who is in charge of this ship? What is the spirit that puts it? Like you got to put them in the back because otherwise they'd be like, but talk about me, but talk about me. Like, shh, first, look at all your, it's like mission control, right? You have to have all the planes. In order for there to be mission control, there needs to be planes on the ground and coming up in the air. So you address what is the traffic and the flow, and then you can look at what do we need to implement as a pattern? What are our ethics? What are those stars that we see ourselves being, the constellations in the sky? How do we connect with all of those as well as each other? And to recognize that divine aspect too. Because some people also do a hard stop when I say, you're divine. You're like, oh, don't go there. Oh, you know, because we have a lot of baggage about being present and divine. Like, oh, it's okay. You know, most people, gods and spirits are fine, but oh, it's hubris too much to see yourself in that same thing. Like, but you're a part of this world. We just explored all the other parts, and which are, yes, those are divine. They're sacred. They have all these aspects. And here is the main weaver in all, you know, in control of all of this, who's making the pattern, who's making the choices, who's selecting the threads that make your path, and can change them up whenever you need to, right? You need to change the thread, you need to change the pattern, you have the power to do that. So.
That's awesome. I love it. I'm over here like, I can just listen to you talk about this all day. I think it's so funny because I often tell the guests on the show, if we stop talking, that means we're totally on board with what you're saying. We're like, tell me more. Okay, now I have to talk about touch the sky, kiss the earth. You know, the dance part. You know, I am a minister of the Fellowship of the Fans in Chicago. And I noticed that a lot of people, you know, who are just coming into paganism or just curious or whatever about queer spirituality or any spirituality, there's a section where like we never force, well, I might force people, but we invite people to come and celebrate and dance with us. And I notice a lot of people are afraid to move. And at first I thought I was like, oh, maybe they're like shy or they don't know how to dance. No, it's not that. There's this whole like, wait, dance? Wait, what? You know? So tell us about, I guess, the whole chapter, because I'm all into it. Like, just like everything, word for word, go. I'm just kidding.
Just start reading.
Just start reading. Actually, I think this audience would be fine with you just start reading. But, you know, I know, well, I can't say I know. I'm thinking that, you know, you've had some of the same experiences I have where people are afraid to step into that power of dance. And, you know, I try to be mindful of people who are differently abled. And one of the things I say is like, hey, you know what? If you can't dance how I dance or move how we move, we can help you find a way that works for you. So tell us about this chapter and all of it.
So I know dance does, it throws people into a panic, right? Just the same thing with art, you know, or like in Sigil Witchery, we're like, well, now we're going to make some marks. Like, I can't art. Like, okay, everybody. If you can do this with your finger, or if you can draw with your toe, you can do the thing. The same thing when it comes to dance. I actually prefer almost to call it ritual movement, right? Movement. We're all, even when we're sitting still, we're still moving, right? The heart is beating. So even if you aren't able to get up and physically move around, right? There are ways of just simply even moving your hands or breathing to activate the space, or moving your neck. Like, it depends on what level of accessibility ability that you can move through. And it is, I think people are afraid of their power. And that's a concept I'm seeing. Dance is one way to manifest it. When we think about magic, right? So when we talk about going back to the breast section and saying like magic is the invisible known, it's the, you know, it's known, it's there, it's air, it's the air we breathe, right? Air doesn't, we can't see it, but it exists. If we look at magic the same way, that suddenly it becomes more real for us. So we often have this hang up, right? Of going, I love magic, but I don't want to fully embrace it because it might feel silly, right? Because society tells me magic is fantasy and it's only in books and special effects and other bullshit. And we also do the same thing with ritual. Like, it's amazing how many people are afraid, like, what if the ritual works? I'm like, well, why are you doing it in the first place? You want to have effective ritual, right? It should be effective. And how do we make it more effective, which is also covered in this book too, is making ritual so that it has a profound effect. And it does not have to be high ritual. It can be breath. It can be drinking a cup of tea. It can be washing yourself. It can be eating something. These are all the rituals within the larger ritual of being. And the movement, right? The tactility of it. You know, if we go through, so the tarot I use from the fool all the way to the hermit as another aspect of describing the journey, because I am a huge tarot nut. I love the major arcana. I love the stories. I like to see the patterns. It's like stories and myth and art together is my happy jam. And so, you know, you can look at the postures, right? Like, what is the classic postures for the magician to have the one hand above and below? And how is the empress sitting? And how is the emperor sitting? And the priestess and all, you know, how is the fool moving through the space? And when we look at deities and statues and pictures and such, like, there's a reason that Pan has a certain posture, and that we might see Artemis, you know, and Diana in with that strong position here, and Kali Ma has a different position. We see that again to see Aphrodite and Urzuli, and, you know, those sort of more sensual postures that we tend to see, like, they all have different types of power. And it's so much easier to feel and experience that power simply by moving our bodies, rather than being like, well, let me read 60 volumes on this. It's like, you can read 60 volumes on Hecate, but if you stand there for a moment and call it in and light the incense and feel about holding those torches and to feel that serpent energy and those different aspects of the underworld, you're there. You are suddenly there and you're transported. And I'm not saying, again, not knocking those 60 books. You can read all day long. Do you. But you're going to feel Pan a little quicker if you think like a goaty goat. I'm a little goaty goat. I got a little goaty tail. I'm going to jump around. I'm going to get all musky all over everything. And suddenly you are there. Like, you can have a 10, you know, minute long poem invoking Pan. And I guarantee you'll get him there in 20 seconds or less if you start shaking your tail. And you don't have to look good. This is like, you don't have to look good. What does look good do? I want you to feel it. It's more important to feel it than to consider, oh, do I look dumb in doing this? I say, sort of made a career in dance about getting people to do kind of silly things, which I mentioned in this book. So for over 10 years, I have been teaching people about wall kittens. And you're like, what is it? So my Philly accent's coming along. So wall kitten, W-A-L-L. It's not war kittens. That's a different song. Wall kittens, little Viking kittens. Anyway, those are a little sharp. So you know, wall kittens are it's visualizing that you have a stack of sleeping kittens on either side of you and that you reach out to pet the kittens. And you know, suddenly everyone's like, oh yeah, nice little furry kitten. And if you're allergic to cats and suddenly you're having a psychosomatic effect to imagining kittens floating in space next to you, then it can be whatever person of whatever gender or non-gender gets you excited, or a horse's nose or a puppy, whatever you can tactily put there in your brain and go, I'm going to reach out and touch the thing. Because what happens when you reach out to touch it, suddenly you feel your fingertips and you are reaching out into the space and you're not just doing this, right? It's hard to pet kittens like this. You reach out into the space and you're rooted to the ground, whether you are sitting in a chair or laying down or standing, right? You can feel that connection to the earth and reaching out and petting those kittens. And that changes. It changes dancers. It changes how they move tremendously. I've had students, baby beginning belly dancers, who've been dancing for 6 months. I brought them to a show. People are like, have you been training them for like 5 years? I'm like, no. No, because if you get to people's brains, right, if you can give them examples to have fun with what they're doing, it changes the learning process and it gets people more excited. Like, yes, you're a dork. Yes, I'm a dork. I'm a huge dork. Here are your kittens. There are your floor ferrets. And here is the sky bunny. You know, and I know there are people who are going to read the book and roll their eyes at that. And I'm like, you again, have fun with that. But I got more people who are doing, oh my gosh, I can feel working with deity and drawing it down now instead of like looking like you're being held up at a bank or trying to protect yourself from a football. Like, I understand what it means to connect my body to the ground, right? To kiss the earth with your feet and to touch the sky because you feel it. And that is a transformation. And it's so simple, but it does have a little bit of silliness to it because you should poke at yourself because this whole physical body stuff has a lot to laugh at.
And you know, it's been for too long, it has been stereotyped and almost done as a stylized. If you are not the cookie cutter version of the human that you supposed to look like, then you cannot do X, Y, or Z. As a person with disabilities and a fat person, when I get up and dance salsa, everybody draws their jaw because they're like, oh my God, Laura can dance. And I'm like, yeah, I have a body and I like to move it. You know, that doesn't mean my disabilities disappear. It just means today I am feeling it and I'm going to do it. And I think the basis of it is, as you said, to have fun. But speaking of having fun, I, of course, wanted to touch more about the tarot. People might say I'm biased because I am. I have, and you might appreciate this, when a person comes to me and they have a magician reverse, I often have them stand up and turn the card around and stand up like the magician, opening the chest and reaching up into the sky and pulling that energy and moving it through your body and then pointing down into the floor and kind of like say, look what I can do, or look how I can transform it. And of course, for me, the body language, both in the fool and the magician, are very apparent. I think those are the two that I work the most with people, body. How in the world did we have the same idea? Of course, not totally. How did you bring tarot to movement?
It's been a connection. So, you know, as dance and magic and witchcraft were really linked at a crucial point in my life, loving and like and learning the tarot at the same point too, like all around 1996, it was the year, let's just throw everything in here and mess it, you know, make it into a steamy cauldron of things. But I love to tell stories with dance, which is why in my early days of learning belly dance and folkloric dance and such, is that I was also very theatrical, right? I'd been known for doing Gothic belly dance and different kinds of fusion, because the first thing I wanted to do was to tell a story. The very first performance I ever did, which involves sword and veil and floor work. For those of you who don't do dance, that's too much shit for a brand new dancer to do. But I'm like, I'm going to be an angel that comes down from heaven and avenges something. And like, I had the story in my head because that's the only way I could remember a choreography. It's like, I knew what the music was going to do. I was going to tell myself a story so I can remember how my body was going to move. So that connection to the body and the story, right? Like when we look at the tarot, it is, or at least my favorite tarot cards, right, have figures or movement of some kind. I think that is evocative to tell the story. I get really sad when cards are just like, here are five swords. Like, it doesn't tell me anything about what's going on here. What are those swords moving? How are they moving about? Just don't give me five swords. That's lazy. Soapbox.
No, but it is. It is. And if you don't have, of course, I have memorized the tarot backwards and forwards, but if you don't have like a blueprint of the Rider Wisemith on your head, and then you have a card with five swords, it's like, so what? So now what happened? So I get it. So off the soapbox myself.
You're so funny. You know, I was actually impressed with that too. I thought the whole tarot thing, you know, I mean, the whole book, everything you put in there, and I know I've been gushing, but everything you put in there, it's like, even those of us who have been doing this for a long time, I was remembering things, I was being inspired by things. I was like, oh, that's a cool, yeah, that's a cool way of doing that. And the tarot was one of those things to where I'm just like, I know the tarot backward and forward, but how you are linking it to each of the chapters, I was like, that's really inspirational. And I was feeling it too. I was like, oh yeah, the chariot, da 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 da, or oh, this and that. It was really cool. One of the things that you said that was, I felt, was very interesting. When you're talking about dance and you're talking about, you know, calling Pan or Hecate or whoever, and you do it through movement. For me, is exactly what I do in my book, Otherworld. I talk about, I have a whole chapter on ecstatic dance because it's easier for me to move than it is to sit there and do a litany of words. And I was on a podcast a while ago when my book Upper World came out, and someone's told me that they felt that it was irresponsible that I was teaching people invocation, because, and I hate gatekeeping. We had a whole show about gatekeeping and how we hate it. It was so funny. But
I will say every show we talk about gatekeeping.
Yeah. But they were like, well, you know, that's just powerful. And to have the energy of a god or goddess come into a person's body before they're not ready. I'm interested in your take about through dance and calling the energies of the spirits, the ancestors, the gods, whoever, and how that transformation, I'm even asking, what is your take on that whole idea of a beginner doing that sort of invocation dance magic?
I feel like you're put me in the irresponsible group.
Yay!
Like, so we brought up the G word, right? So with gatekeeping, it's such a Western occultist point of view to be like, only these approved people may invoke the deities. Like deity hasn't been wandering around going, how you doing?
Right. Thank you.
It's like, there are so many non-Western traditions, non-Western occultism traditions, where if you're present, it's going on, you might have an experience, you might get ridden, something could happen. Something could be consensual, it might not be consensual. Like, that's all, so of course, that's a whole discussion into itself, but right, you know, with spirits. But it's like, how do you learn to do it. And I feel like most folks, early on when I was teaching witchcraft back in the day, one of the early rules was often like, don't summon anything you can't get rid of. And I think that's still.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. Yeah.
It's always still kind of a thing. But I also have very much, this is the thing I was talking with my Patreon folks about, is I feel like we talk about power, right? And we tend to go, oh, power over self, right? But then a lot of people come to magic to also think about, I need to have power over other things, like other people, the environment, like instead of seeing it as a relationship.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And relationships, there are many different kinds of relationships, but I am in a relationship with deities and spirits and the land and people that I work with, right? I don't have power over them. I can tap into myself. And I think that's part of learning bodily autonomy. And I think you need to kind of experiment with that, because you can't just say, oh, you've been through 3 degrees, you've got it now. Like, it's going to be different for every person. For some people, it might take them 3 years. Some people, it might take them 6 months. Some people might take 20 years before they ever really understand a concept. It's not the amount of official training that's going to get you there. It's going to be a series of life experiences that get you there. And I would prefer it if people do it in settings where they do a little research and they do protection. They understand, you know, what they're doing in their space and do a little research with whoever they might be calling in first. You know, not just picking a random deity off the internet. Not quite a fan. But I tend to think that most people who are reading my books and engaging in this conversation have done at least the bare minimum. I do feel that.
I think that you articulate this well in the book. I mean, if you're going to be invoking a deity, I think you would go back to some of the earlier things that you said in the book about having that a ritual should have a purpose.
Mm-hmm.
It should have a why. It should have a reason as to what you hope to accomplish. So if you do want to invoke a deity, that's great, but why this deity? What is the purpose of calling this particular spirit into maybe your space or even your body? Like, there has to be purpose behind it. And so I think that you've already articulated that well. If you know why you're doing it, then anything that happens after that, you're going to be able to deal with and handle, because you've already know what to expect. Well, at least you have an intention behind what you're doing.
Yeah. And we think about how much like modern culture is about fear.
Yeah.
You know, especially I have a lot of the paranormal folks on the periphery. So like occasionally things go by where I'm just like, that's fascinating. You know, but it's like the satanic panic type of things. And, you know, that, you can, what if this brings in negative magic or whatever? Like, magic is a force. It's like nature. Start there. Understand that. Stop putting everything in, this is black, this is white, this is light, this is shadow. Like, you have to see the whole of these things. And there's so many different points. This is the liminal, right? The weaving of the liminal in the space here of possibilities. And so if you're like, oh, something terrible is going to happen, like, is it?
Yeah, well, and what is terrible? Because sometimes the hardest experiences that we have are the ones that inform us the most. So a lot of your work in this particular book reminded me, because I do a lot of work with the fairy, the fae, whatever term you want to work with there. And from what I've learned from my experiences with working with them is that morality is not a concept that the fae embrace. They don't even have a word for good and evil in their languages, because to them, emotions are just emotions and states of being are just states of being. Everything can have consequence. Everything can have benefit. Mm-hmm. Both and neither at the same time. So your work just really reiterated that for me. I'm like, yes, this is exactly how this is my worldview right now, is that you have to be willing to embrace, have the responsibility of accepting the consequences and also embracing the positive that might come out of the hard things.
Absolutely.
Not even to mention how dividing magic into black and white has incredible racist roots to the word. which is a show in and of itself. There is no such thing as black magic or white magic. That is a construct of racist folks. So stop, take that off your vocabulary.
Well, and a lot of people, they're like, oh, I'm a white witch. You know, I only do healing magic. And it's like, wait. If you're performing healing on people without their consent, that is very unethical magic. You know, what is, in my opinion, love magic is some of the most unethical magic that you can do, because you're not taking into account what the other person wants and you're bending their will to your own. Mm-hmm. So white magic isn't necessarily this white magic concept. It's not necessarily ethical.
No, it's not.
You talk about in your book about ethics and and value.
There's also an extensive blog post I wrote a few years back about the fallacy of black and white magic, which goes into the racist background of all of that. And also thinking about, again, like, magic is a natural thing. Like, you could do a healing on something that actually causes more damage than it does actual healing. You know, I'm thinking about with, you know, something that seals over a wound, right, but doesn't allow the infection to get out. It's a metaphor, or it can be a very physical thing. And to just, you know, our desire to put everything in labels and boxes is not, it doesn't really have a good place in witchcraft.
Right. Or if you're doing a personal healing magic too, because you're getting all these headaches all the time, so you work a magic to suppress the pain of your headaches. And then you find out later that the reason that you had these headaches is that there was something terribly wrong with your body that needed to be addressed. And so now you've hindered that natural process of the body that's trying to alert you of danger. So there's lots of connotation. There's both consequence and benefit that can happen from every action that you do.
Absolutely. So we're coming to the end of our show, which is making me very sad. Laura, what would you like to leave us with? Like, what closing words do you have for us?
Oh, here is my brain. Oh. My closing word. Ah. So this book, Anatomy of a Witch, the Map to the Magical Body, it's not a quick read. Word people, right? It's not you're going to read it and you're like, I have now fully embraced whatever body positivity and I'm fixed. It's like, no, this is to start the map, to look at the legend, to start plotting things out in your practice, to be a guide that you can look at these different parts. Everything which is symbolic and metaphorical. You know, some people are like, oh, you're saying only witches have these things. Like, no, these are all metaphors for a way for witches and magical practitioners to delve deeper into your practice, to connect with the body. And so I'd encourage you to kind of to sit with it, to play with it. Everything is meant to be explored. You know, this is really, truly an experimental and explorative path. Right? You need to be able to go through that experience in order to learn the lessons and to see and to know, like, is this a good science experiment? Is it a bad science? Maybe we won't call that deity in again. That did not go so well. So having that sense of play and exploration and adventure is, I think, going to get you very far if you allow yourself to just play a little bit.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Laura Gonzalez and Ruby, did you have any closing thoughts or anything?
Of course. Where do you get the book? Tell us, Laura, where can we get the book?
It is published from Llewellyn Worldwide, so technically it is available everywhere. You can buy, if you'd like to buy signed copies for me, you can go to my website and go to the shop, and I'll be happy to send you a signed copy for monies. but if you're not going to get it from me, I highly recommend checking your local metaphysical store. Support your local shops. That's kind of the next best thing, because they're there, especially as we're going through the pandemic, still trying to, you know, keep business up and going. And if you can't do that, then find another independent bookstore before you go to the big giant conglomerates. So.
Awesome, awesome. Ruby, any closing words?
Well, I just was so impressed by the exercises, particularly in this book. And I know that Laura and Chris and myself have a large wealth of experience in the magical community between the three of us. We are exceptionally advanced, but what I loved about this book is that these exercises were very simple that would speak to a person that's just starting a magical journey. But a person with experience can really dive deep into these very simple exercises and delve deep into some very complex and intense ideas within these very simple rituals. So I really would say I highly recommend this book. I think that everybody could find benefit from it.
Awesome. So I wanted to thank everybody, and especially our audience that you guys can't see. But thank you everyone for coming, and I'm going to stop the recording, and I'm going to open up the audience to ask questions and to chat and things like that. So I'm just give me a second to